Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. Today I'll be talking with Raw Dance's Wendy Ryan and Ryan T. Smith about Double Exposure, the company's critically acclaimed program of duets by more than a dozen West Coast choreographers. Also from the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra, I'll talk with the SFCO's newly appointed executive director, Renee Conlon, about the ensemble's first main stage concerts. And Ben Simon joins me by phone, the conductor and artistic director of the orchestra. Our regular contributor and critic at large, Peter Robinson, will give the listeners a preview of the exhibition Klimt and Rodin, an artistic encounter which runs through January at the Palace of the Legion of Honor here in San Francisco and marks the centenary of Rodin's death in 1917 and of Gustav Klimt in 1918. Stay with us. Wonderful music of Johann Sebastian Bach to start off this week's Open Air. That's the Violin Concerto in E Major, which will feature the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra's concert mistress, Robin Sharp, in a program called Strings Attached, this Friday at the Herbs Theater, Saturday at the First United Methodist Church in Palo Alto, and Sunday at St. John's Presbyterian Church in Berkeley. Joining me in studio is Renee Conlon, the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra's newly appointed executive director. She studied at the Juilliard School in New York, the Conservatoire de Fontainebleau in Paris, as well as the Peabody Conservatory. She's also performed with opera companies and symphony orchestras worldwide as a soprano soloist before embarking on a career in arts administration. She brings quite an administrative pedigree to the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra, having been president and CEO of Napa Valley Museum, general and artistic director of Toledo Opera. Toledo, perhaps if it was in Italy, I'm not sure about that. Chair of the Department of Music at the University of Charleston and Commissioner of Culture and History for the state of West Virginia. Most recently, Director of Development at the Fine Arts Museums of San Francisco. Born and raised in New York City, and she now resides in Napa Valley. Renee, welcome to you, and again, I hope all is safe and sound with you and those close to you in Napa.
Thank you. Yes, things are improving every day. Good. It'll take a while recover, but it's much better.
Good, good. And no stranger to these airways, conductor Ben Simon joins us through the magic of radio by telephone in rehearsal. Ben has performed for audiences around the world as violist of the Naumburg Award-winning New World String Quartet, the Stanford String Quartet, as well as with the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra and the L.A. and New York Phils. He's a native San Franciscan and has taught at Harvard and Stanford universities and has been a member of the music faculty of UC Berkeley since 1998. Ben has led orchestras and contemporary ensembles here and in Europe and conducted performances for the theater as well as soundtracks for major motion pictures. I've had the pleasure of collaborating with him for a memorable couple of concerts of the music of P.T.Q. Bach last season. Always a pleasure to welcome him, or at least his voice, back to Open Air. Hey there, Ben.
David, how are you?
I'm good. How's rehearsal going?
You're in the middle of, I've got a live orchestra surrounding me, David, and we can't wait to play some music for you and for your listening audience.
Oh, my gosh. Well, let's hear a bit, and then we'll talk about the concert that's coming up.
Okay, we're going to start that Bach concerto. You just heard a recording. This is live music. This is the first movement of the Bach E Major Concerto. You're listening to the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra in rehearsal with our concertmaster, Robin Sharp. Here we go.
Ben, come back. Get a better phone and call me back. Well, until Ben comes back, let's talk a little bit, Renee, about what you'll be bringing to the table.
Well, it will not sound like that. That I can guarantee you.
More high fidelity than low fidelity.
Much more high fidelity. The orchestra is really made up of some of the finest musicians in the Bay Area, and I'm afraid that doesn't represent them very well.
Well, that's why they're practicing now.
That's why they're practicing. That's right.
So the program we'll talk about with Ben is part of the Violin Concerto in E Major. Concertmistress Robin Sharp will be performing that, along with the Bartok Divertimento Strings, which we'll round things out with, and Schubert's Quartet Satz.
Actually, that's been changed.
Oh, okay.
The program is opening with a little hors d'oeuvre by Peter Warlock. That was his pseudonym. It was actually Philip Hazelton, I think, a British composer. And it's a very charming set of three dances from the Capriole Suite, which actually has more than three dances. But we've excerpted three of them to perform.
Nice. Ben, are you back with us?
I am back with us.
Yeah. Gosh, that sounded like crap. It's like low fidelity radio with like an old 78. We're sorry we didn't think that through and get a little better miking for you for the airways. We're having quite fun talking about the sound quality of that, but I'm sure it sounds great in person, and we're looking forward to those concerts.
Much better in person, and I encourage your listening audience, if they want to hear it sound really good, to come hear the orchestra live and not over a not-so-smartphone.
Yeah, very well. So one thing that I feel like I should emphasize about the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra is that all your concerts are free of charge.
Yes, they are. We're very proud of our admission-free concerts. We're trying to spread the joy and the excitement of classical music to people who might not be, our general classical music listeners. We're lowering the barriers for people to come into the concert halls. Admission free is just one part of that. The orchestra has a great deal of spirit. We try not to be stuffy in our presentations, and I think the programs have a wide appeal to people who might not be consider themselves connoisseurs of classical music. This Bach concerto is a perfect example.
Well, having you having collaborated with you, I know that you are about the unstuffiest person I've ever had the pleasure of working with. You really do make the concerts accessible, and you bring a certain incredible joie de vivre to everything you do with the SFCO.
And we'll do the live orchestra over the telephone a little bit better next time.
Indeed. So it looks like you got quite a find here with Renee.
I think we do. We're very, very lucky to that she found us and we found Renee, and I think it's the start of a beautiful relationship.
Nice. So tell us a little bit about, or maybe Renee can chime in as well, a little tag team about the rest of the SFCO season.
Well, our next program is full orchestra. This first program is strings only, and we have the Bach Concerto and a wonderful Divertimento by Béla Bartók. So we're kind of softening people up with the Bach, and then we're going to hit them with a little Bartók, but it's a fantastic piece.
It is. We're going to hear...
The orchestra's sounding wonderful. We're not going to play any for you right now. We're not quite ready for prime time.
All right. Well, we've got a lovely recording ready for the final movement done by the Hungarian State Symphony Orchestra.
The Bartók is probably his lightest and most accessible piece. People will really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about it, Ben.
Well, it's based on a Baroque concerto grosso, so we have a violin cadenza, and we have soloists playing like a Handel or Corelli concerto grosso soloists against the orchestra. but it's full of those dance flavors and rhythms and moods of the folk music of the Hungarian countryside that Bartók loved so much and he studied. And the second movement is one of these crazy, creepy, crawly night music, kind of really perfect for a Halloween weekend, is the second movement of the Bartók. But it's a fantastic piece, about 25 minutes in length, and we'll be doing a little bit of a show and tell about the orchestra for people who might not know much about Bartók, so we're going to help them listen their way through the piece, and I think it's going to be a really enjoyable performance.
Very nice. Well, we'll hear the third movement, the Allegro Assai from the Divertimento, shortly. I'm going to talk with Renee just a little bit longer about the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra. I'll let you get back to rehearsal.
We've got some work to do, David. Thank you for having us on.
Thanks for taking the time. And please give my regards to that wonderful orchestra, would you?
Thank you very much. Thanks for having us.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
So let's get them rehearsing.
Yes, absolutely.
Nice of him to interrupt, yeah. Though.
I was reading recently something about Bartók. He was fascinated with bugs and the night music, and much of his music, he has the sounds of nature and bugs. He traveled with 10 suitcases full of bugs of all kinds.
I had no idea. I know he collected folk songs. I didn't know he collected bugs
strange,
as well.
But interesting.
Wow, I should say. So this particular concert is showcasing the wonderful strings of the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra.
Yes, absolutely. And hence the strings attached. I think that the concert has the two B's on the concert are two of the greatest composers that I think ever lived. Bach, of course, from the Baroque period, is maybe some musicians think the greatest composer of all time. I don't like to make such grand statements, but he is an amazing composer. And Bartók is just, I'm a huge fan of Bartók. I love his Bluebeard's Castle, his final work.
It's at once chilling and exciting and accessible.
Concerto for Orchestra. It's his earlier works, I find, he was influenced by Strauss and Debussy and Brahms. And to me, they're very lush. And I would even use the word romantic. His later works become a little bit more, I think, neoclassical, more spare. But this is a divertimento. It's just it's an amusement. It's really charming.
Interesting. I don't suppose this concert is going to have any entomological element then for the bug collecting.
No, I don't think so. I could bring in a few though.
Strings attached, but no bugs allowed.
No bugs.
Great to hear. Well, Renee, you discovered the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra. Where do you see it going under your tenure?
You know, I am amazed by is the how many people still actually don't realize that you can go to a first-class symphony concert, chamber orchestra concert, with this wonderful orchestra, and you don't have to pay anything. Of course, we love people to become members. We have to support it in some way. But you can come, and you don't have to pay to get in. And I think we're not only unique in the Bay Area, I think we're unique around the country. But the board and the founder of the orchestra, Edgar Braun, was committed to making classical music accessible and eliminating the cost barrier, which exists for a lot of people.
And that takes money. It does.
It takes a lot of
so,
money.
And I think most organizations start out their presentation with, you know, your ticket sales only account for a minor portion of the budget. And in this case, there are no ticket sales.
Really,
so we really do.
Sales.
We really do need the help of everyone that's involved.
So we have a very compelling argument for people to become members.
Indeed. Strings Attached. The program is tomorrow at the Herbst Theater at 7:30. Saturday at the First United Methodist Church in Palo Alto, also at 7:30, and then this Sunday at St. John's Presbyterian Church in Berkeley. Information at thesfco.org. Renee, I look forward to talking to you again as the season progresses. And, of course, it was always nice to have Ben on.
Great.
Looking
love
forward
to see you at our concerts.
Another collaboration with Ben would be great. And as I mentioned, we're going to hear the Divertimento for String Orchestra, the third movement, which can be heard this weekend with the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra. Here we'll hear the Hungarian State Symphony. Thank you. healthy helping of Béla Bartók here on Open Air. That's music that you can hear as part of the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra's performances this weekend. Tomorrow at the Herbst, Saturday in Palo Alto, and Sunday in Berkeley. Information at thesfco.org. Ben Simon, conducting and artistic director of that group. The program also includes music of Johann Sebastian Bach with soloist Robin Sharp on violin, and music of Peter Warlock. Information at thesfco.org. Still to come, Peter Robinson, our regular contributor and critic at large, will give us a preview of Klimt and Rodin, an artistic encounter which runs through January at the Palace of the Legion of Honor here in San Francisco. And next, well, after their sold-out world premiere at ODC Theater last summer, Raw Dance returns tomorrow through Saturday in an encore presentation of Double Exposure, the company's critically acclaimed program of duets representing more than a dozen West Coast choreographers. Raw Dance co-directors Ryan T. Smith and Wendy Ryan are the evening's sole performers in an event they've dubbed the Ultimate Duet, and they both join me in studio today. Wendy Ryan is a native New Yorker who has been dancing since age 3. Her training came from the School of American Ballet, as well as the Alvin Ailey Dance Theater and Brown University. She co-founded Raw Dance with Ryan Smith in 2004, which has evolved into an award-winning, internationally touring company. She also worked for many years in front of the camera and behind the scenes on a series of dance film projects with noted choreographer R.J. Muna. Wendy, welcome back to our airwaves.
Thank you so much.
And the aforementioned co-founder, Ryan T. Smith, is also a Brown University grad. Perhaps that's where you guys met. We'll talk about that. Also a co-founder of the RCJ Dance in Providence. Since moving to San Francisco, Ryan has worked with a number of acclaimed dance artists here in the Bay Area and has been a member of the Margaret Jenkins Dance Company since 2005, touring nationally and internationally with them as well. Ryan, welcome to you.
Thanks for having us.
Welcome back, I should say. So tell us a little bit about your Brown University days. I think there's a connection there. Or was it, did you overlap?
We did overlap for a period of time, and you are correct. We've been dancing together now for a total of 19 years.
Wow.
I always feel like that dates us a little bit.
And at 21, you know, you're just...
I love you right now. Thank you. We met back in college, and we actually were paired together. It was my freshman year, we were paired together by a number of choreographers, and that honestly started our history as the Ultimate Duet in many ways.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we never knew that would turn into this. We were paired up right away. I think we look fairly similar. We look like a pair. And that's only been accentuated with time.
They put the two tall, lanky dancers together.
Exactly.
And then what actually brought you out to the West Coast?
Oh, now you get a gossipy story.
Right. Dish away, my friend.
I was looking to move. And Wendy was looking to leave a relationship. She came to join me while I decided if San Francisco was the right place. And then a week into being here, we both decided, let's make the jump from the East Coast. Let's do it. Let's give it a shot. We went back to New England and to New York for Wendy for a total of 3 days, packed all of our things out, and shipped everything here just moved on a whim.
Shy of starting a dance company, it is probably the second craziest thing we have ever done.
Oh, okay. Well, now you've got to go on about that. That is quite a production to start something from scratch and to make it a success as you've done.
It is. We feel so lucky that it really has taken off the way it has and that we've had support through the years to turn it into something real and that we completely believe in.
And I think part of why we actually were interested in Double Exposure as a project is that the company is our baby, and it is the two of us. And we realize as we mature and as the company matures as the two of us, this was the perfect opportunity to branch out and to involve other choreographers, but to kind of still maintain the foundation of our 19-year history.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about the brief works. These are all 4 to 5 minute works that you've commissioned from choreographers I imagine that you've admired or worked with. Yes?
For the most part. So we've certainly admired all of them. Although some of them we actually did only discover in the process of really trying to, it almost felt like casting a show, the way that we were trying to find choreographers who really represented vastly different viewpoints in the contemporary dance spectrum. So six of them, I think it's six, are based locally somewhere in the Bay Area. And those we certainly knew. Some of them we had, you know, worked next to in different capacities. We had never danced for any of them. That was part of our starting point. We didn't want to build on a previous relationship. We really wanted it all to be fresh. And then the others span from L.A. all the way up to Seattle.
And you're incorporating a lot of different dance styles. It's not just one style of dance that you'll be representing in these.
It's all things that fall under contemporary dance, but it does range from dance theater to buto to contemporary ballet. There are things that are more image-based, things that are more about the physicality and the sincerity of a physical reaction within the body. It's the full spectrum. And that, too, is important to us, to kind of show the diversity of contemporary dance, to allow an audience to come in to see one evening where you actually can understand that the West Coast really just has such a diverse spectrum of what they offer right now.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about the music that's going to be done. Some of it original, some of it just prepared for these pieces, I imagine.
Yes. We were super lucky that there were several of the duets that had originally commissioned scores, including one by local choreographer Catherine Hawthorne and one by Johnny Goss, who's based in Seattle and did the piece for Kate Wallach. And I'm pretty sure that's the one that you have.
We'll listen to that in just a moment. But I also want to talk about the... I understand that even though these are all completely different choreographers, you're having a unifying approach to the way you're costumed.
Well, neutrals, and more neutrals until we get to the end and go back to vintage, pale blue, prom...
Puffy dresses.
Fantastic something, yes.
It was important for us to think
puffy
of
puffy dress for you as well.
Not for me, actually. I do have a...
He does
have
a black
little
dress.
Black dress, my own little black dress, and I was very particular about that little black dress.
You know there's a little black dress run with the San Francisco Front Runners every year.
Well,
no.
I'm ready.
Saturday morning.
Now I just need to work
so
on my
prepared.
Running. We really wanted to make sure that it felt like a full evening-length work and that there was a thread throughout the work. So while there
so to
are,
speak?
Yep, exactly. while there are 40 different costume pieces over the course of an hour and 14 minutes, it has all been integrated. The costume changes are a part of the piece. They're a part of how we take on each role, how we shift worlds, and so they are an integral part to the work.
And it was interesting. I mean, some of the choreographers we worked with were very, very particular about exactly what they wanted for a costume, and some were like, eh. Do what you think is best. So we did try to tie them all together. That and, you know, there are no wings, there's no backstage. You see all but one of the costume changes. So we also had to make them physically possible.
I was going to say.
We have to put on some leotards, so we decided to do
say,
that
is
a little
bit. Like adult-only presentation?
No, no, no. But there's a lot of Velcro. It means there's some like, tear-away clothing in there.
Well, you've sold me. I'm on my way to ODC this weekend. Tonight through Saturday at 8 p.m., ODC Theater is at 3153 17th Street in San Francisco. Information at odc.dance/tickets. So what's coming up for each of you after this? I understand there's something going on at the Green Room called Concept Series 21. What is that all about?
So we've had a salon now since about, I guess, 2007, where we invite local Bay Area choreographers to share works at any point along the choreographic process. So from, we literally say straight from the studio, we've had people working on things an hour before the show starts. It is fresh, it is new that way. We also have people who revisit old work but want to give it a new spin, test it out in an intimate atmosphere. We've held it at the Green Room for the last...
Three rounds,
I believe. It's informal. It's intimate. We serve popcorn. We serve coffee. We literally throw popcorn at people occasionally. It's all trying to break down the stuffiness and the boundaries that I feel a lot of people have around contemporary dance. Mm-hmm. This is contemporary dance with a living room vibe.
Yep. And it is always pay what you can. I think similar to the Chamber Orchestra's amazing mission to make everything free. It really was trying to put dance out there and make it much more accessible to everybody.
Very nice. Information about that project is at rawdance.org, as well as information of what's happening at ODC in Double Exposure. Wendy Ryan and Ryan T. Smith, the featured performers through an hour and change of some dozen or so works of choreography created just for them. It's at the ODC Theater on 17th Street. We are going to hear some of the music. I imagine you're also doing some stuff with Margaret Jenkins in the days ahead.
You know, I'm sad to say that my time with MJDC is now over. I worked with Margie for 12 years, and she just had an amazing show that was actually also at the Herbst Building, the War Memorial Building. But because our company is now so busy, I just couldn't handle doing both anymore. I had no time in the day.
Not a bad situation to
be in.
Good
reason for change.
Yes.
How about you, Wendy? What's coming up in addition to the work with Raw Dance?
That's a very good question. I'm leaving town next week, but we're both running away for mini vacations after we finish this project. But no, really, this our company has been blessed with so many opportunities. We just made a short dance film for the San Francisco Dance Film Festival. We've just had back-to-back projects, and it takes all of our time in the best of ways.
Very nice. Well, let's go out with some of the music that was commissioned by Raw Dance for the duet choreographed by Kate Wallach. Part of Double Exposure at ODC this weekend. The composer is Johnny Goss, and he's based in Seattle. Music that can be heard for Double Exposure. Wendy Ryan Smith, thanks so much for coming in again. We'll look forward to your work this weekend and in the days ahead for Raw Dance.
Thanks so much for having us.
Music composed by Johnny Goss, based in Seattle, prepared exclusively for Raw Dance directors and choreographers Wendy Ryan and Ryan T. Smith as part of Double Exposure at the ODC Theater this tonight through Saturday. Rawdance.org or odc.dance for more information. I'll round things out on Open Air. By the way, I'm David LaTulipe, your host for Open Air. Things will be rounded out this hour with an overture by Fanny Mendelssohn, which is going to be presented as part of the Peninsula Symphony's concerts this weekend. Tomorrow at the San Mateo Performing Arts Center and Saturday at the Heritage Theater in Campbell. Joining me now is Peter Robinson, our regular contributor and critic at large, to talk about some things along the museum way, as well as a film or two, aren't you, Peter? What's this week's
approach? A musical event.
Yes.
Yeah. So I've been up to the Palace of the Legion of Honor, and I just want to say a brief word about the two major art museums here in the Bay Area. Both the De Young and the Legion of Honor are actually wonderful places just to take a walk around even before you go in them. At the Legion of Honor, you get magnificent views of the bay, the Golden Gate Bridge, all from the west side. It's in a set of gardens, and I think museums are coming to play a part in our community life, which in some ways goes beyond art, sculpture, painting. They have different evenings where there's a musical or jazz evening. They also have lectures both at lunchtime and in the evening, and some of the colleges of art here use the facilities. So just a visit to an art museum and a walk around the gardens, the Golden Gate Gardens, or you can, if you're at the De Young, you can go to the Japanese Garden. You're getting something much bigger than simply looking at a painting, but looking at a painting itself is a reward. And it just opened last week is a extremely interesting exhibit bringing together two great different artists, the sculptures of Rodin and the paintings of Klimt. So we're back in the mid-19th century. The period runs until 1918, 1917. And in fact, bringing the two artists together is a celebration of the fact they did meet. They met in 1902 in Vienna, and that was the beginning of a movement in the art movement in Vienna known as the Secession. And Rodin, of course, is very much into the body, tough, strong, erotic sculpture. And, of course, Klimt, too, is into the female body. In fact, they both shared a adoration of women's bodies. And I imagine, since they had a number of mistresses, that modelling for these two particular sculptors or artists may be like auditioning at Harvey Weinstein's studios in Hollywood. They had a close connection, they understood the body and how things worked. So there are three rooms dedicated to their art, and my suggestion is that you actually start at the smallest room. This is in the Legion of Honour I'm talking about, which has the sketches or paintings, and sometimes both with art and with sculpture, a creation will begin as a sketch. It'll begin as a piece of artwork done on paper. And the advantage of going to that particular room to start with is the second half of the room is decorated in the style of early 20th century furniture, so you're already setting up the phase. And I think the dates of these two artists, they both die within a year of each other. In 1918, Klimt dies of influenza, and the year before Rodin dies, is that we're looking at a period that runs through the First World War. It runs through the end of what we will call the imperial period for France, Great Britain, in the 1880s, 1890s. So we have art coming out, which in itself is revolutionary. With the sculpture of Rodin, the human body as a realistic type of body, as opposed to the classical that had been around ever since the Renaissance, began to shock people. The actual images of real flesh, real bodies. And one of the small exhibits, which is done in small clay models, is known as the Burghers of Calais. And this small little group were molds that he would use. Today, if you want to see the real live Burghers of Calais, they in fact are in London. They stand outside the House of Lords, and they have their back, incidentally, to the English Parliament, which always made me smile. And I think you can see how Rodin had a different style of almost marketing. If you liked the model, he would then go to the next major work, and we move to real metal sculptures. For people who are interested in seeing more of Rodin, I might mention that the garden down at Stanford University, the Rodin Garden, is a nice little walk around so you can get two different perspectives. And the famous Thinker by Rodin has already been exhibited and is on exhibit at the Legion. When it comes to Klimt, we're looking again at a different style of painting, very sexual, very evocative, and we have some of the big murals that he really became famous for. an interesting movie, should you be interested in following the story. It's called Lady in Gold. It's a story about a particular clay painting that was seized in the Second World War by the Nazis and then finally recovered. And it was a family gift to a particular family. And the family had now moved after the war to New York. Austria went on to retain this, and then they had to have a legal case to get their own painting back. So there's a kind of lot of history in terms of how the artistic movement was changing and how, in fact, this particular period encompasses a special time, a time warp, because after the First World War, we move into the Dadaists, we moved into Picasso, we move into a whole different style of painting, and this is like a bridge from the 1880s, 1890s to the mid-early 20th century. A couple of quick observations. If you're in the Clint Room, there are both sculptures and paintings in there. Take a look at the dark forest. Late in his life, Clint moved to landscape painting, and this is a particularly black, dark. In fact, I found that you had to get within a couple of feet of the painting to work out what it was. And this, I think, is a contrast to the use of gold, which is so much part of the colour texture that he uses in his other paintings. So it's a really worthwhile visit. It's something I would go through very slowly. I think the great thing about going to a museum is letting the works come to you and letting the feel of the painting reach you. And particularly if you're looking at a piece of sculpture, walking around and seeing it from different angles. And this is particularly true with Rodin, where the different shapes of the body, the lovers, very intense, passionate, erotic, and you can just walk around and see how things are going and then judge things at different distances. So when I mentioned The Dark Forest by Clint, at first it looks like a patch of black on a wall, and then you move in and you suddenly see the shadows and you see things changing. So this exhibition runs throughout the November-December period. It runs right until January. It's a good example of a brief encounter in 1902 where the two artists met in Vienna, and suddenly you find this range of ideas, some in sculpting, some in painting, come together. And it gives you a fine expose of what a creative place Vienna was, frankly, at the end of what would be the Austrian-Hungarian Empire. Come 1917, things change, things collapse, and suddenly we're moving into a different period. So this is really a bridge from the late 19th century to the early 20th, seen through two distinguished artists' eyes, Clint and Clay.
Marking the centenary of Rodin's death in 1917 and that of Klimt in 1918, Klimt and Rodin, An Artistic Encounter, will run through January 28th. Information at famsf.org.
I guess I'll have to change my plan. I should have realized there'd be another man. I overlooked that point completely until the big affair began. Before I knew where I was at, I found myself up on the shelf, and that was that. I tried to reach the moon, but when I got there, all that I could get was the air. My feet are back upon the ground. I've lost the one girl I've found.
Well, that's an interesting choice of segue, Peter. Tell us about that tune in your next segment.
There we go. Yeah, that was Fred Astaire with Jack Buchanan. The song is, I guess, I'd Have to Change My Plan. And, of course, it's part of that music which came out of the poets of Tin Pan Alley. This was the great period of songwriting, great period of lyrics. that came in this country from roughly 1929 through the 30s and then moved into the 1940s with the Busby Berkeley musicals. So we're looking at a period when words and language, so far as lyric writing, mattered, and people would take an everyday phrase, an everyday slang word, drop it into a song. It was just one of those things, a trip on a plane, all sorts of things that particularly Cole Porter put his finger on and would today still stand with us. So we're having a musical soiree looking at some of the great song and dance numbers from both the golden era of film through the 1940s, 1950s, at the Sausalito Library on November the 2nd, Thursday, at 7 p.m. And I think part of it is to recognize that although considered lightweight and trivial, there's a lot of thought that goes into song and dance routines. And the whole nature of song and dance involves, in very simple terms, the whole body. It's not just the feet, it's not just the legs, it's not just the hips, it's not just the arms. It's a total physical, spiritual, mental performance that I think often gets overlooked. So we'll be including some tap dancing by Sammy Davis Jr., who's one of the great hoofers of all time. We'll have a song which always makes me smile. It's by Marilyn Monroe called I Want to Be Loved by You, which comes out of Some Like It Hot, which has the best line in any movie as the finishing line, and nobody's perfect. So
yeah, I remember that.
We've got a twist around there. And then the song that we kicked off with, I guess I have to change my plan. I never knew there'd be another man. You know, little double entendre, you're not quite sure what's going to happen. And they mention I should have bought the blue pajamas before the whole affair began. Well, there you are, you know, pajamas. Mm. You know, who wears pajamas nowadays? But they are part of the Lands End catalogue, so I guess we better pop into them. And I'll be the lost chord from the pajama game. So there we have it.
All right.
So
Sausalito Library, yes.
This is definitely a fun toe-tapping experience. It's on Thursday, November the 2nd. It's at Sausalito Library. And I mentioned before how museums are playing such a big part in community connections. And I think this is true in the Bay Area for libraries. Libraries, you can get your book, you can get your DVD, but there are programs on reading, programs for children, movie evenings. In fact, libraries are a place where communities do come together. And if you want to come together for a song and dance evening, mark it on your calendar, November the 2nd, Thursday, November the 2nd at 7 p.m. at the Sausalito Library.
Thanks, Peter. I'm sure you'll have a lot of fun with that.
Thank you. Good to be with you, David.
Always. Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't offer a little bit of a taste of what's happening with the Peninsula Symphony, as I am a member of that fantastic community orchestra. I play flute and piccolo for the Peninsula and offer their pre-concert talks. Tomorrow at the San Mateo Performing Arts Center, the pre-concert talk is at 7. Likewise at 7 at the Heritage Theater in Campbell on Saturday. The great pianist John Nakamatsu is our guest. He will be performing Beethoven's 5th Piano Concerto, known as the Emperor Concerto by the publishers of that work. Also on the program, Mitchell Klein conducting, is the fantastic 5th Symphony of Tchaikovsky. And Chad Goodman will be conducting a piece by Fanny Mendelssohn. The Peninsula is continuing this season with offering the music of female composers, sadly still so underrepresented in this modern enlightened age. I mean, witness an orchestra here in this town of ours, a mega orchestra that has a season announcement that has a whopping single woman represented for the entire season, Kaya Sarriaho. Well, things were worse in centuries past. Mozart's sister, Maria Anna, nicknamed Nannerl, was a gifted composer who, in the early days of the Leopold Mozart Dog and Pony Show, was top dog for a while, being billed as a fine violinist and harpsichordist before taking a back seat to her younger brother, Wolfie. In fact, after age 18, she was discouraged, if not forbidden, to pursue music, as she was at a marriageable age, and none of her compositions survive. Not so, or at least not to the same extent as the early 19th century's other sibling sensations, the Mendelssohns, Fanny and Felix. Visitors to the Mendelssohn household around 1820 or so expressed great admiration for the musical skills of both siblings. And Fanny has some 460 or so compositions that remain, if not in the immediate repertoire available to study, play, and enjoy. But again, the prevailing role of women in European society being what it was, Fanny was compelled, probably without complaint as best we know, to allow her brother's star to shine all the brighter. Her father was tolerant rather than supportive of her activities as a composer. Even Felix was quoted as saying, "From my knowledge of Fanny, I should say that she has neither inclination nor vocation for authorship. She is too much of all a woman ought to be for this. She regulates her house, and neither thinks of the public nor of the musical world, nor even of art and music at all, until her first duties are fulfilled. Publishing would only disturb her in these, and I cannot say that I approve of it." Well, this from a guy who, when he performed for Queen Victoria, played some of Fanny's songs, penned them as, proffered them as his own, and then after the Queen expressed her great interest in them, said, "Oh, well, actually, they were written by my sister." So hats off to Felix for giving his sister some props. On the Peninsula Symphony's concerts this Friday and Saturday will be the Overture in C by Fanny Mendelssohn. Here's a little taste of it for you here on Open Air. Thank you. Just a taste of the music of Fanny Mendelssohn, her Overture in C. Chad Goodman will be conducting that with the Peninsula Symphony Orchestra, of which I am a proud member. Concerts are tomorrow evening at the San Mateo Performing Arts Center in San Mateo, and then Saturday at the Heritage Theater in Campbell. Concerts are at 8, but I'll be offering the pre-concert talks at 7 if you'd like to learn a little bit more about the music. Go to peninsulasymphony.org for more information about those concerts, led by Artistic Director, Music Director Mitchell Sardou-Klein, again John Nakamatsu with the Concerto No. 5 of Beethoven, and Chad Goodman conducting music of Mendelssohn. Check it out if you can. I'm David LaTulipe. You've been listening to Open Air. Our shows are archived at kalw.org. If you've got a show segment suggestion, send me an email, david@kalw.org. My thanks to Neil Swinkles for producing the show. Tune in next week if you can.